we've been covering this for a while now here on the program. The depressed state of the dairy markets. In some ways, more ways than one. Obviously, prices are depressed, but certainly producers are feeling it emotionally as well. Scary side note to all of this. Part of the backdrop is people struggling with depression and things like that. Maybe we've heard coverage even about, you know, the suicide risk for farmers is unbelievably high with the amount of pressures that they face every day. New York Times piece on that a while back. NPR had some coverage of that as well, and certainly an important thing to talk about. Now, hopefully everyone is above board as far as that is concerned and is taking care of themselves, but it has not been easy for dairy producers, a lot of other sectors as well, but certainly dairy is the biggest game in town here in Northwest Washington, as especially in Whatcom County, at least, as far as agriculture and farming goes, in terms of the number of people involved, the amount of value that it brings to the local economy, the significance to the local farming community and culture. And so it's just kind of become accepted of late that, well, prices are terrible. A lot of operations right now, if they look at things day to day, they're losing money, and they're hoping for a time when they can start gaining ground again and eventually start making money again. What are these markets doing? How long is it going to stay this low? Maybe a little bit of encouraging information in the numbers this week. And joining us right now, Lee Mielke, formerly a radio host with the Sunrise Show back in the old days, and with Dairyline Communications after that, and still a columnist that's syndicated nationally on dairy markets. Welcome to the program this morning, Lee. And maybe a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, you're saying?
Yes, Dylan, thank you. Yes, hopefully it's not a train, but the global dairy trade auction on Tuesday this week was up 2.7%, and that's encouraging. We saw good, strong commercial disappearance of dairy products in February and March. April's looking good. We saw good U.S. dairy exports in February, the latest figures. And yesterday we got the March milk production report, and U.S. milk output appears to be slowing, but it still topped a year ago for the 51st consecutive month. And that's a lot of milk, and that's the primary problem that we have, is not so much the lack of demand, but too much milk to produce dairy products.
The milk marketing system is notoriously complex, and I won't even attempt to explain how it works because I don't even fully understand all the details of it. I've tried to wrap my mind around at least the basics. Even with as complicated as this all is, and as hard as it is sometimes to figure out how that price ultimately gets determined, the price that the producer here in Whatcom County gets for their milk, it still ultimately is an issue of supply and demand, right? And that's been the issue, is that the amount of milk being produced is, in a lot of cases, just too much in different categories.
Yes, yes. And it only takes roughly a 2% surplus to affect the remaining 98% of the milk price. And so we have looked in the past at supply management programs, and we tried the whole herd buyout program back in the 80s, and that was a success. But the government is hesitant to do that kind of program again because it does have ripple effects in other markets. That's true. But at any rate, it does still come down to the law of supply and demand. And right now, however, milk prices aren't even paying the cost of producing the milk. And so we are seeing increasing numbers of dairy farms that are calling it quits. Culling is up, as I put in my column. A lot more dairy cows are ending up at McDonald's these days because the low milk prices and the creeping higher feed prices are pinching dairymen in the middle. And they can't carry on for very long with that type. Nobody who's listening to us this morning could stay in business if they saw their incomes at the same level they were 5 years ago, let's say.
And as far as milk prices go, I saw an interesting graphic a while back showing milk prices over the past 15 and 20 years, and some of those numbers are sadly lower than they were that many years ago.
Yeah,
with the phenomenon that's underway.
We had a great year in 2014, and a lot of that was due to China getting into the market and importing a lot of dairy products. And that boosts global prices, and that, of course, in turn brings U.S. milk prices up as well. But China has not been in the market as much. Some speculation is that they overbought. Others are saying that they're supplying more of their own needs or finding other sources. We can't export all of our surplus, but what we do export, we are doing well at it, and we're making money. But it's just not enough.
Well, the last time you and I talked about the concerns about the dairy markets and how things were low and could potentially even go lower, I think that was back, I want to say, in January. And since then, I've been watching your weekly updates, and I've been seeing a lot of mention of increases in production, that even with the low prices, the production, the amount of milk being produced has continued to go up. But is that what's causing this shift now, that number is finally turning around where less milk is being produced here, at least in terms of what's happening in the United States and in the markets we directly compete with?
The gains are slowing, as this report that came out on Friday indicates. The increase in milk output is slowing, but it's still above a year ago. For March, it was up 1.5% from a year ago. And that may not sound like a big increase, but when you put that over the number of cows in the country, we're talking 17.8 billion pounds in the 23 highest states. Now, there's an interesting phenomena in the dairy industry. It's been there for many, many years. When milk prices go up, milk production goes up. And when milk prices go down, milk production goes up.
Yep.
And the idea is put on more cows, produce more milk, and make it up in volume. Well, that can only last for so long, and eventually it doesn't work that way anymore. And what dairy farmers have found in the past in better managing and just riding herd on the cows that they were milking, if they did a better job in feeding regimens and things like that, they could probably make more money per cow by better managing. But you can only manage so much. But even that,
what you're talking about there, is still increasing production, right?
Yes, but if you're feeding less to get more output per cow...
Right, more efficient production, yeah.
It's more efficient production, now, and your bottom line looks better.
Now, you're saying that the increase in milk, essentially, the increase in production is slowing, but it's still increasing by those what seem to be small percentages, but amount to significant amounts of product. And with everything so tight, that makes a big difference on the market. I guess you want to see that, as far as prices, you want to see that go the other direction. That's not going to happen. But really what affects it then also is consumption. And if you have consumption, for instance, increasing, you can have increasing production. What are we seeing on that side of the equation?
Well, if we look at the percentage of the rate of increase in population and compare that to the increase in milk output, technically, bottom line, the U.S. is a milk deficit country. Now, that will really confuse a lot of people, but we import a lot of dairy products as well. So it's not a real solid factor to point out. Even though we don't produce enough milk to feed our own country, a lot of that is made up by the amount of cheese and butter that we do import.
So what are the brightest spots here in the report this week? I scanned through it, and you were actually talking about some prices going up, believe it or not. Prices are on the way up?
Yes, we are seeing, strong milk. Our cheese prices, we're on the block cheese price, we're at $1.60 and a quarter per pound. That's a good price for this time of the year. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, when you say, well, the cheese price went up a penny, big deal, and it's a penny. Well, for every penny on the cheese price, that's a dime on the milk price. Mm. And you take a dime times per hundredweight of milk produced on the farm, that can add up to a pretty good chunk of change. Looking at the Class 3 futures closing, the settlements on Friday afternoon, we don't see a $16 per hundredweight level arrive until August. And I'm not even sure that $16 is going to cover the cost of production for most dairy farms. And we're only looking at a peak of $16.35 per hundredweight in September as the peak for the year. That's not anything to write home about or break out the champagne over. Of course, you can't afford champagne and milk budgets either. So,
well, so what you're saying is there may be some increases. There may be some hope. We may see some prices going up. But the outlook isn't saying that, well, all our worries are over.
No, and here's the other card that's, you know, under the deck, and that is what happens this summer. If we see a lot of hot weather, and some of the forecasts that I have seen is forecasting hot weather, we will see milk output in a lot of the larger producing regions of the country start to fall. And if we start seeing milk production falling and actually slip below a year ago level, that will certainly boost prices. If we see China get back into the market, and China has been in the market, not as much as perhaps we'd like to see, but there's also issues with what's going on in New Zealand. And weather is not looking promising for them, I believe. Right now they're going through a lot of wet, a lot of rain, and so that's going to soften their milk output. And Australia and New Zealand are the two largest dairy exporters in the world, and the EU is right behind them or tied right in there with them. So, you know, we're not a regional U.S. market anymore. We're a global market. So a lot can happen and change this scenario in a hurry if weather would, there, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's always cause and effect, though, too. I think over a large swath of the nation, like you talk about, if we end up seeing hotter and drier weather, could reduce milk production, could also potentially increase feed prices, though, too, couldn't it? If crops don't do well?
Yep, that's true.
there's always something.
The fact is, people, if the weather starts getting better here across the country, they're going to break out the cheeseburgers. That will help the cheese price, and we start, you know, making ice cream again as the weather warms up. And we're starting to see some draw away from the butter churns. The cream is starting to go into ice cream production as ice cream makers are gearing up for the ice cream season. You know, all these things, they're small at face value, but you add them all together and they can have a significant impact.
And you talk about the weather, though. That's been in the headlines, too. And for dairy producers in different parts of the country, that's been a thing. You were just telling me before we came on the air here about back home for you, which is back in the Midwest. And they're dealing with, what were you saying, something like 18 inches of snow?
They had a very unseasonable blizzard this week. And in some parts, 12 to 15 inches of snow in mid-April. Now, one other factor before we run out of time here, Dylan, is and that regards the trade issue, all of the trade disputes, the trade wars, the ending of NAFTA. There's a lot of uncertainty hanging over the global market right now. We don't know what's going to happen if President Trump pulls us out of NAFTA. The dairy industry could tailspin down even further. Hmm. Our dairy exports, particularly to Mexico, are extremely important for the U.S. dairy industry. And if something jeopardizes those exports, Katie barred the door, we could have a real serious situation in the dairy industry.
And then on top of that, we've got politics going on right now, too, as the farm bill is up in the air and questions for, obviously a lot of different sectors and industries and things like that. But what are the dairy leaders saying about what they're seeing in the farm bill right now?
Well, the dairy title was brought to the floor, and the House Agriculture Committee has approved its version of the farm bill. Most all Democrats are opposed to it, and there's a few Republicans that are questionable whether they would support it. And frankly, there are some things in the dairy title that they're calling improvements, but I'm not sure. We need a better safety net for the dairy industry than what this farm bill has to offer, in my humble opinion.
Lee Mielke with us, a syndicated columnist covering dairy markets and dairy issues for decades. We appreciate your time and expertise on this, and always nice to have you right here in our backyard, too, up here in Whatcom County. We hope that there is more light at the end of the tunnel, and that the light isn't just an oncoming train of even worse news, as you're saying, could be with some of these, especially some of that trade stuff that you're mentioning. I mean, those are huge question marks, but that's scary stuff to even think about. So we'll all keep our fingers crossed for the time being. Lee, thanks so much for your time this morning.
You bet. Thank you, Dylan.
Manure and what to do with it. A lot of actually really good things that can be done with it. And people who aren't in and around the farming community often think of manure, poop, as waste. But those in farming realize it's quite the opposite. It's well, brown gold to some. Certainly, it's what our crops grow from here in Whatcom County and Skagit County as well. And that's what this show is focused on, by the way. Welcome back. We continue here on The Farming Show on KGMI News Talk 790. Dylan Honkoop with you here on your Saturday morning. Of course, glad to have you here with us talking about things that are important to kind of, I don't know if unique is the right word, but certainly we've got some different farming issues here than maybe in other parts of the country, and that's why we have this local program to focus on this. I want to thank our local sponsors, McAvoy Oil Company, brand new sponsor. Thumbs up to them for coming on board and supporting us being able to have this conversation weekly here on KGMI, as well as Laurel Farm and Western Supply and Farmers Equipment Company, our original sponsors of the program. We talked quite some time ago. Well, we've talked a lot about manure. Manure is a big deal here locally in terms of making sure it doesn't go to the wrong places, trying to get it to the right places as far as feeding crops and managing a sustainable cycle. Most dairy farms, that's how they operate. Their manure feeds their crops feed their cows make the manure, and the cycle continues. But there's more to it than that, obviously. It gets a little bit more complicated than that. And one of the things that we've talked about many times here on the program as well is the phenomenon of anaerobic digesters and the things that those can do with manure. Nutrients Nicole Emberton at the Conservation District is always very good at reminding. She's a nutrient management specialist, aka a poop scientist. One of the things that they've been finding with these anaerobic digesters is doing different things with different specific nutrients within that manure. And we talked a while back with Craig Freer with Regenis Digesters. They're a division of Angar Company. A lot of people familiar with Angar, been around for a long time, and they got several years ago, over a decade ago, actually, I want to say, into the anaerobic digester business. They're experts on this, and they have a whole division now, Regenis, working on this. And beyond that, they've got even more advanced technology as far as separating out some of the specific nutrients in that manure product, whatever your preferred term is for us. Joining us right now with WSU is researcher Chris Benedict. And welcome to the program this morning. You guys are studying some of this stuff as far as what it could mean for some of the crops around Whatcom County. Of course, manure from dairies traditionally feeds the grass and the corn that's grown for the cows. But can that nutrient, can that manure product, that byproduct of producing milk, can that also feed other crops in the county, and how do they manage all of the right nutrients getting to the right places? Chris, talk about DAF. Dissolved air. Explain what it is. I always even get the acronyms wrong and all of this stuff. But what are they doing with manure?
So DAF. Thanks, Dylan. So DAF is a technology that is a kind of at the back end of the anaerobic digestion stream of manure, and it produces, it uses some technology that resulting creates a phosphorus-rich solid and separates that off from the digested manure. Digested manure has a big chunk of its phosphorus sort of dissolved within the particles that are floating throughout the solution, and this technology separates out those solids and produces a phosphorus-rich product that has a little bit of nitrogen, but also is a good soil amendment.
Now, for people in farming, we take for granted the N, the P, and the K, but for people not as used to that, those are kind of the basic food groups, if you will, that plants eat, the nitrogen, the potassium, and the phosphorus. So this is one of those main categories of plant food, essentially, that you're explaining it is suspended in that product, that manure, after it's gone through this digester, after it's gone through this process that people are producing either electricity with, or they are producing actually straight natural gas, different things like that. But then there's this product after, and what's the value of that? So it sounds like what you guys are seeing is the potential for some value here as far as a fertilizer, essentially a phosphorus soil amendment, a fertilizer that could be used out of the back end of one of these digesters.
Yeah, the concept here is, historically, dairy manure was applied to, berry fields in Whatcom County. And so you connected, a source with basically a sink or an area that has demand. That historical connection has kind of been diffused because of issues around food safety concern with a horticultural crop like this that's minimally processed in some cases. There's some potential risk there for applying manure during the time periods when it would be most desirable by the plants themselves, whether it be raspberries or strawberries. Basically that's the context there, is to sort of reconnect them by utilizing some byproducts from anaerobic digestion.
And this stuff is more useful or better suited than just straight manure. Why? I mean, what's the hope here? And what are you exactly studying?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So, we don't, there's several points to cover here. One is that manure that goes through anaerobic digestion has a significant, almost complete reduction in potential pathogens that are problematic for humans. So
things like E. coli and stuff that people are probably familiar with, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And in addition to that, we completely remove the dairy from the dairy farm itself, because as you mentioned, it does provide nutrients to, grass and corn that is then fed back to the animals. And so it cycles there. But what we're looking at is if we strip off a portion of it, can we redistribute it to areas of demand? In addition to that DAS solid product, we're also looking at a product that is nitrogen rich. So it's a little bit different than the phosphorus rich product.
And DAF, the DAF, what does that stand for?
dissolved air flotation.
And that's that's really referring to the process that they use to separate this phosphorus-rich stuff out, right?
Yeah. It's literally, it pretty well describes what actually goes on in that process.
And then what's the other stuff called? Isn't there there's another D acronym here for this other product that you're talking about, if I recall?
DEP
or something like that?
Well, there's, I'm not sure specifically what you're looking or referring to, but what, yeah. I can describe to you what other products that we're looking at. And one is, as I mentioned, a nitrogen-rich product. The other, for just sort of the science purposes here, we have to include, other sort of manure products along the digestion process. And
okay.
As such, so the project that we're working on is not only looking at the agronomic ability of these products to provide amount of nutrients, but also at the correct time to high value horticultural crops, mm-hmm. but also is looking at the food safety part of it. And so because of that, we're applying not only raw manure, but also manure that has been anaerobically digested, but also some of those nutrient rich products. We've also included a compost that is derived from dairy manure, mm-hmm. sort of as an additional treatment. But the concept's all the same, trying to reconnect, areas of production with areas of demand.
Chris Benedict with WSU and their extension out here studying this and really kind of bringing two major local farming worlds together between the dairy folks and the berry folks and how they can support each other with some of the things that they have. In some cases for dairy, it's a place to spread out and get these nutrients out of a system. If that's important, and then also for dairy folks to bring in nutrients that have more to provide than, say, putting on more and more commercial fertilizer, which I know a lot of folks are trying to get away from in their systems toward more sustainability. So, Chris, talk about it. You're studying this out at my dad's farm, right, on the raspberry farm there. How do you practically do this? What does it look like on the ground?
Yeah. Coincidentally, it is one of the project sites is at your dad's farm, and so we apply these. We take about a 5-7 acre field actually, and divide it up into isolated sort of treatment areas, and then we apply these various products either by equipment or by hand in some cases, and we deliver the same total amount of nutrients to each treatment, but we just they're derived from different sources, so to speak. And, we're not only looking at the plant growth and yield, but also the benefits that to the soil itself that these products would have or mm-hmm. have or not. And then, of course, sampling both the soil, the plant itself, the leaves, and also fruit. And those are then in collaboration with Meijun Zhu over at WC Pullman. She looks at, possible pathogens. You mentioned E. coli, Listeria, Salmonella, runs various sets of tests to try to determine the potential, hazards there.
Yeah. And I know that's been a concern for a long time. And I know that's something, my dad and I have talked about, and it's been one of his goals and something that I worked on with him in years past is how he's wanted to know how can he utilize dairy manure as a nutrient on his growing raspberry crop. It's obviously easy to apply in between crops, in between plantings, I guess I should say, when it's open ground and incorporate that into the soil. But how do you feed a growing raspberry plant that's there year after year after year with that nutrient that comes from dairy manure? It's a little bit tricky, and that's been one of the main concerns, is it has to be done in a way that's safe, that doesn't cause any sort of contamination of anything. And I know that's a challenge he's dealt with, and it's kind of what you're studying here is the results of how he's been doing that and using some other products now that you're bringing into the mix. From what I heard from him so far, some of the initial results are encouraging as far as the ability to avoid any sort of contamination.
Yeah. I would say at this point, I mean, this we're 2 years into a 3-year study, and at this point, we're not seeing really any significant risk from almost all of these products in the way in which we applied them. You know, we try to apply them early in the year so that that they're, you know, basically land applied, you know, as far away from harvest as possible, but also the manner in which they're applied, the area that it's applied to, but also, you know, the application rate so that we're not, you know, applying it excessively. Of course, we want to meet plant demands is the real goal there. But
and really that should be the goal anytime that nutrient is applied, whether it's to a grass field, a corn field, or a raspberry field. And certainly in any of those cases, you got to worry about not contaminating the surrounding water and environment. You need to worry about not contaminating the actual product that you want to feed the soil, and then the soil in turn feeds the plant. And I think a lot of this has come out of the increased focus on soil health. And that's a positive too here. You know, we've in months and years past, we've had Ray Archuleta here on the program and David Montgomery talking about his book on soil. We've talked with several experts. We've talked with producers and farmers about their growing attention on the health of soil and how big of a factor that is to the health of their crop and ultimately to their livelihood. And it sounds to me, maybe you want to weigh in a little bit more, Chris. This is a big motivation for this is the soil health aspect.
Yeah, that definitely is a big component, and that's, you know, what we actually spend a whole lot of time looking at. You know, the soil biology, the soil chemical, and the soil physical components. You know, which kind of cross each other to sort of overlook the overall soil health component, and that's a big driver. Manure is, you know, generally speaking, a positive for soil. And so, you know, really a lot of these products, you know, the carbon that is, you know, a major component of them, bring about the benefits, not only in short term, but really, really in the long term. That's the overall goal.
Well, and I think the overall message here is we've got the ingredients for a very sustainable system. If you look at the system from a very high level view as far as agriculture and farming, in our region here, it's about getting those ingredients to the right place at the right time with the right care.
Yep. And I couldn't agree with you more.
And it's not easy to do. And it takes a lot of money, and it takes research like what you're doing. And it takes care and some rules, certainly. But at the same time, it takes a willingness to pursue doing things in a increasingly sustainable way, which is happening across the farming community. People have just so embraced that mindset. Chris, thank you so much for your time. Again, Chris Benedict with WSU, Washington State University Extension out here. We really appreciate your time and keep us posted on the results of this. This could have some good news if things turn out well, both for dairy and berry.
Yeah, you bet. Nice talking with you, Dylan.